All right. Welcome to my first little test of a podcast here at Heartbeats in Amma in Copenhagen. My name is Adam Katzending. I am a photographer, or I used to be a photographer, and I decided it would be interesting to sit down with some people that I've met over the years and talk about things that they don't normally get to talk about. Throughout my life, I've done a lot of interviews and get posed the same question over and over and over. And you begin to feel a bit like you're only known for one thing and people don't really get a chance to know who these individuals are. So I thought it would be interesting to bring people in and chat about who we are aside from what we're known for. I decided that it would be fun for this little project to bring in my friend Frederik Lentz Andersen to talk shit and try not to talk about what we do for a living, but it'll probably go there in some way, shape, or form. So here I have Frederik on a freezing cold day. He's come down to waste a little bit of time with me. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam. I really enjoyed it. As I told you yesterday when we were on the phone, I figured you and I, that's how I sometimes view us, the two of us. We're kind of like the old guys on the balcony at the Muppet, Show. Like with the angry guys.
Yeah,
of the commentators. The commentators, right?
Exactly.
You know, sometimes it's, especially if you do it with a smile or you do it with a bit of, we love the industry and we hate the industry. And right. It's kind of like it. Doing both. And I just wanted to say something. Now you just, when you introduced yourself, you said you used to be a photographer. And I think that's, in my perspective, you are an extremely, extremely talented photographer that's been in, I've been in the industry for 20 years, and I think you are very talented. And, you know, before you correct me or say anything, it's like being an alcoholic. You never stop being an alcoholic. You're always there because you're an artist. It's like being a painter or an alcoholic, so you never know. You're an absent right. photographer, if you want to put it like that, right. because right now Corona has done a lot to this industry, and especially now you being an American living in Denmark. And as we also spoke about, I think people in the industry, knowing the industry, they think that because you've had Tom Ford campaigns out the past two seasons, because you are associated with Vogue or all these like great publications all over the world.
One day.
So many others, and you have 500,000 followers on your Instagram and stuff. People think that you're so much more expensive, and I think they're afraid of hiring you, to be honest.
Might be the case. I'm going to now have to mobile pay Frederik 100 kroners. I promised him for saying that for me. Before we get into all the good stuff, what do you do?
Almost a year and a half ago, I started a small creative bureau called Holidays, and we do campaigns, visual solutions for obviously primarily fashion, because that's the industry we all right. came from, but also for more commercial brands or furniture, like design in general, cars. We do a lot of different visual solutions. And I used to work, that's how you and I got to know each other. I used to work at Euroman magazine.
For how long? You were there for a long time.
13 years. And before that, I was with Arena magazine for 2.5 years. Mm. And while at Euroman, I was also working. I've been the fashion director at the various publications, but I worked at Euro Woman as well, which is the female equivalent to Euroman.
Right.
That's how we met.
Right. So just to roll back, we're not going to talk about Frederik's job, by the way, or nope. my job as much as possible. But I met Frederik in Paris on the metro on the way to the Tom Brown men's show. And he, Frederik, lost. just because there's no visuals here, Frederik is a very well-dressed man. However, at this moment, Frederik looked like he was dressed like a Swedish businessman on the weekend. and he asked us for directions, and me and my friend Nabil thought he was a bit goofy, very nice, but a bit goofy, and kind of took the piss out of him a little bit and took showed him which metro stop to go to. This is what, 2013, 14, something like that.
A while ago.
And then we just started, you know, then we recognized one another and started bumping into one another. I did not know he was Danish until much later. I don't know why. It just didn't come to me. And here we are, however many years later.
And now you're living in Denmark.
And now I live in, I must have lived in New York at that point in time. That was a long time ago. I thought that maybe we could talk about something else.
Yeah.
So what else do you want to talk about? That's the name of this show, by the way, or it's going to be the name of this show. So going back on this, my cousin, James, is a 2 meter tall, very goofy, skinny dude. Hilarious, but also quite socially awkward in certain situations. And one night I was at a party and we were having just this great rapport with all these people, having this great back and forth, and everybody was dying laughing. There was some joke and everybody was just dying laughing. And as the laughter died down, my cousin James, who was just like red like a tomato in his face with laughter, still smiling with this ridiculous smile, just like breaks the silence and just says, "What else do you guys want to talk about?" And we just busted up laughing because it's like, who says this? Who says this, you know, in this moment? It was just the most kind of rude, but not intentionally rude thing to say, where, you know, it's almost like what you're talking about isn't interesting, so let's talk about something
like putting
else.
A pressure on the situation as well, because you get like just when you said it, I started sweating immediately, though both you and I usually never like shut up when we go kayaking, for example.
Which we happened just, one time because I slept in. We went one time and I slept in the second time. I slept in.
Okay.
You wanted to go at like 6:30 in the morning. There was no way.
But we went once with one of your friends from New York.
Yeah.
Didn't we go another time just to?
No.
Okay. When we went, we didn't shut up. And she was lost. She was behind us all time.
We went out on like one of the windiest days. Yeah. Rode out to Bankina.
Yeah.
Smoked some cigarettes on the... on the dock out there.
That was nice.
That was nice.
Yeah. We should go again now.
I'm ready whenever. So we both have worked in fashion for a long time. We've been to a lot. Do you go to London Fashion Week as well? New York?
I used to go to, you know, before. That's the thing throughout the years at the various magazines. I've gotten away with spending a lot of money on
other people's money.
Other people's money, okay. Exactly. Never mind.
Right.
And then, you know, we went to, I got my editor-in-chief persuaded for me to go to New York and London and Paris and Milan at times. And to be honest, well, it built up a lot of relationships, both to photographers, to brands, to possible advertisers, whatever. So I think it's and then it gives the fashion directors a lot of inspiration. Hopefully, it's not a complete waste of money, but of course, it's a lot of money spent on me also, like eating steaks at night, drinking wine with friends, and having fun and driving around in Ubers all over town, where you could go on metro and meet nice people like you. And we've bumped into each other at a lot of fashion weeks. And the funny thing is, like, we've had fun times also at night and sometimes like short chats outside shows. But of course, as I sometimes didn't realize, that was your work as well. So so when you had to be very focused, I was all chatty and stuff outside the shows. But that's I think.
Why were you so chatty, Frederick? we can't talk about that.
No.
Okay.
But but usually I'm I am kind of a chatty person.
No, for
but
sure.
Sometimes I'm more chatty at night.
Definitely, I understand. Okay, cool. So, going around to all the fashion weeks, and we're not going to talk about the shows or anything like that. I mean, one of the things that I find with my work is I'm very bad at having balance in my life in general. Now that I'm not working, I've found that although I'm financially extremely insecure, I'm probably the happiest I've been ever, which is kind of a shitty feeling. Well, it's a great feeling, but it's also kind of scary because it's like, you know, if we go back to this, you know, to this high-paced lifestyle, you know, is it going to diminish my happiness? And I'm always kind of interested because in the fashion industry, I think people, I know people are extremely superficial. Generally speaking, the majority of the people that one would interact with in that industry are showing a very carefully curated facade of yeah. who they might be, or compensating for things that they are not.
You know,
and I mean, I think that's a big part of what I find to be one of the darker aspects of what of, you know, hanging out around all these people. And I think that I personally try to be myself as much as possible, which pisses a lot of people off, which is fine. Fuck them.
I was just thinking, because you're absolutely right in regards to all these people, because the paradox in this like really weird scene to everyone not in the fashion industry and like viewing from outside, there's a lot of primarily women, but also guys that go to the shows. Some people go there to actually get either inspired or to do some buying for a shop they're working for. And then there's a lot of influencers that goes there as much, if not even more, to be seen rather than actually enjoy the show. And then they, at the same time, they do a bit of promotion or like for the show and wearing an outfit outside. But it's become also because of talents like you, it's become as seen as much outside as inside where the show is actually held. But what I've come to the conclusion of and I've come to terms with is that a lot of these people that on like at first glance seem very superficial, it's in some ways it can't be anything else but superficial. And I hate them in the moment as well.
Sure.
but you know, that's an important thing to say.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a game, because they walk across the street, they pretend not to see all the photographers shooting them, because and it's become such a like really annoying game, because they know that that's the reason why they keep crossing the fucking street, right?
Back and forth six times
and imagining or looking on the phones and like having imaginary chatter with each other, like laughing, and they're not even saying anything, right. And that it's so superficial. But in other ways, the way I look at it, it's become their job, and that's what they do right there. And quite often, if you get to spend time with a lot of them afterwards, they're actually really nice persons. But they seem like they're completely brain dead when you walk back and forth like that, right?
Right, and I think that one of the things is that bothers me about it is, going back to being superficial, but like, is that a fulfilling existence? What I'm always thinking about is like, okay, when I'm laying on my deathbed at the end of my life, I want to think back and, you know, be proud of what I did and, you know, and have not compromised too much of myself mm-hmm. for my work or whatever. Or if I am, it needs to be something that I can be proud of. And I feel like, and this is not like a piss take on influencers or anybody, but I feel like you know, these promotions and product placement mm-hmm. and these things that are meant to look organic, it's a bit misleading
yeah.
to the consumer in the end. And I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, are these guys and girls on their deathbed gonna think like, oh shit, I told people to buy a shirt that they shouldn't have bought because, yeah. you know, but I got paid for it. And I don't know. I mean, there's a
selling your soul, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not like you're doing it in a malicious way or anything like that, no. But it is definitely like, for me, integrity is a big thing. And so whenever I've been contacted by brands to like gift me something or whatever, which is not as often as I would like. So if you would like to send me free shit, I'm very clear when somebody offers me something that I would not have purchased on my own, I normally won't take it. I just don't want to be the cause of any needless consumerism, because obviously, like, I'm a consumer. I'm very much a consumer, and I find that none of that consumption brings me any closer to happiness. It might bring me a momentary sense of being closer to it, or a little bit of more fulfilled, but it's very temporary. And I think that if anything, whenever I come home from these trips of being gone for a month or 2 months or whatever, and I've been living out of a suitcase, and I come home to put my clothes away, and I open up my closet, and I'm like, fuck, I didn't need any of this stuff while I was away. I could exist without all of it.
Yeah.
And I always compare it to like going on a hike out in nature, and you know, or going camping especially, and you wake up, you know, to the sunset or sunrise. You don't wake up to the sunset unless you had a long night. You wake up to the sunrise and it's beautiful and there's nothing around except for, you know, trees and animals and what have you. You think like, why don't I do this all the time? Like, why don't I step away from this, you know, kind of society that we live in, which doesn't really make us any happier, and this chasing of money and everything, and why don't I just, you know, go camp every weekend or whatever, you know? And then you go back home, and you get on your computer, and you get on your cell phone, and you get on your whatever, and you go back into your routines of all the shit that you don't really need to do, or that you convince yourself that you need to do, and you forget about what's really important. So,
but don't you think it's the change actually that makes you happy? If you did
the contrast,
exactly. Obviously, that's what I mean. Because if you did it all the time, of course, I don't think like people spending a lot of time in nature in general are unhappy people. But but I still think that it's the contrast that makes you remember like what happiness is and what or what makes you happy.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, you don't value your happiness unless you've been sad. You don't value love unless you've had your heart broken, or vice versa.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But I think that's, definitely. But no, you're right. But, you know, going back to then coming home and opening up my closet and seeing all the shit that I just existed for 2 months without ever, you know, considering that I even still owned it or whatever. Every time I come home, I do like a huge purge of my closet where I was like, well, I've never worn this jacket that I've had for 6 years. Like, I don't know why I'm keeping it. Like, it's, I guess it impresses me when I open my closet, but like, does it bring me any closer to to being happy? So that's what I'm saying with the industry is like, that's one of the biggest qualms that I have with the industry is going around and seeing all of these people. Like, if you've ever been to a fashion party during Fashion Week, okay, so you see them on Instagram and it looks like you're missing out on like the greatest night ever. And if you're actually there, which I've been to quite a few of them, I never really have that great of a time unless I get like obliterated drunk, then I don't even remember it.
No, but when you sit at a French cafe at night outside smoking cigarettes, drinking wine and just like sharing stories, That's nice. That's happy and that's funny and that's like, and then you go to one of the parties in a like huge space and there's a DJ and the girls are mostly just filming each other.
Yes.
Or their faces are lit by the phone. They're looking. It's dark in the room and they're just like lit by this blue cold light, right? Yeah. And it seems so sad, but it's kind of like, hopefully, and I know there are influencers that have kids at home, and when they go home and hang out with their kids and have fun, that's probably their happy moment. And then that's like when they are working, of course they're having fun because they get some drinks and they are they also maybe they get a rush from getting photographed whenever they're getting noticed. I think a lot of people, it's like when I used to model when I was young and you walked down the catwalk and everyone was looking at you, you kind of, it like gave you a rush. And that's how I felt as well whenever I was lucky to get photographed by you or Nabil or anyone. Not anyone, but like one that actually mattered, where I knew, okay, this is there's actually a chance I'm gonna see this afterwards somewhere, right? And it actually gives you a rush, and it might be an embarrassing thing to say because I was even like fairly old. I'm turning 44 in a month.
Ancient. So
I was old in fashion terms. I was extremely old already at the time, and therefore it's kind of embarrassing to say that you get a rush from getting your picture taken in the street. But that's the honest truth to everyone, I think.
Then I raise the question as to like, I mean, obviously we are compensated normally for going to these events and whatever, but with the negative effects that it might have on us when we're there, it kind of makes me ask the question of like, why does it, you know, I mean, it's, you could draw the same parallel with just like everyday society as well, but it's like, why do we continue to follow this kind of like, I mean, fashion is not saving lives.
Mm-mm.
Like, we're not making anybody's lives better, arguably, and that's one issue that I am constantly thinking about. Like, I love my job, but like, am I making anybody happier. I mean, maybe it's inspiring some people, but why do we do it? And I remember a moment when I was in Milan years ago, probably around the time that I met you, actually, and there was a circle of male photographers. We were talking, the show was going on, I think we were at Missoni or something like that. And we were all standing around talking, and somebody had mentioned that that their dad or mom had died when they were young. And we all talked in the circle, and we realized that all of the photographers in this circle were parents of one child, either of divorce or of a parent who had died. And I found that to be so interesting. And that's also something that we have in common as
exactly,
well.
Yeah.
We discussed that on a very chatty night at a gay bar in Copenhagen.
Exactly.
But I find that to be really interesting because it's like maybe we're chasing something, you know, maybe there's some psychosis amongst these people. I mean, I have not taken a survey of the entire industry to see how many people are children of divorce or of a dead parent or whatever. But I think it's quite interesting to have identified that amongst my peers, to realize that maybe all of us are lacking the same thing and are trying to fill
that void.
The void. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not consciously aware of this, like it probably exists.
But there's I think actually there's a truth to that. It might actually be a thing. I never knew that.
I find it interesting, but you know, and then you see all these people traveling all around the world, going to, you know, I mean, I don't just go to New York, London, Milan, Paris. I go to, you know, probably like 20 different cities for Fashion Week, and I live out of this suitcase, and arguably give up on any potential to have a real romantic relationship and to have real deep friendships as well. I mean, I have good friends in many cities around the world, but are they going to be able to be there in the hospital if I got sick, or you know, would I call them if I was sad? Probably not. And then I come home and I realize that I've jeopardized my friendships with people in Copenhagen, which luckily during, you know, this corona time, I've been able to make some really great friends and have some really rewarding relationships that is something that in the last 10 years of my life, I haven't been able to cultivate. Every time I go board a plane to leave Copenhagen, I get very, sad, and I get instantly homesick because I'm like, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going to do my job. My friends' lives will continue as they normally are while I'm away. Like, are they going to forget about me, or are they going to remember that I'm coming home on June 15th or whatever? Like, are they going to, you know, are they going to remember my birthday? Like, yes, they will because of Facebook and whatever. But like, you know, do they actually know what my birthday is if Facebook doesn't remind them? You know, is there going to be anybody waiting at the airport with flags for me? The answer is no. And I always look forward to coming home, but I always, as I'm boarding the plane to come home, I think to myself, like, why do I live in Denmark? Like, I don't have any reason to live here aside from the fact that it's the greatest place in the world. But like, no, it is. I mean, I'm not
saying that. Minor detail then.
No, but like, I don't have any real purpose to live here. Like, I live here because I want to. And that's a difficult thing to come home to realize that you're coming home to a more mundane kind of existence or a very much more normal domestic existence. And, you know, realizing that you've just been away for a month and kind of avoiding your growth and your ability to cultivate your relationships and then you know, it's like going camping again and then I come home and then 48 hours later I board another plane and I leave again.
Maybe it's actually the case that because you do so much traveling and because you're constantly away. I know you're here at times, and right now you've been here for a long time.
Yeah.
But throughout the years, because you keep like traveling and then you come home and then you go again a couple of days later, or maybe like you just change the stuff in your suitcase and paying an insane amount of Danish tax, though, that you're actually making most of your money outside of Denmark, which, yeah, that's why it never made sense, but it has always made me proud whenever you say Copenhagen or Denmark is the greatest place on earth. And that was the reason why you were willing to pay one of the highest taxes in the world here, even though you're making your money in New York, Paris, Milan.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that not being received with flags, if I were to transfer to my own life, always going away, always being, like, always working or traveling, whenever I got home to my three kids, they would, like, quite often, they would not give a fuck about me for the first couple of days.
Because they felt abandoned or a little bit? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I'm not, I know it's different and this is like we're grown up people and stuff, but you know, they, like, if you're not able to count on someone being there always, like now when you talk about friendships and in general, the older you get, the less you need to keep up. That's how I find it, because I don't have time to nurture my friendships either, even the ones I've known since I was a kid. They call me up all the time and be like, hey, Frederick, where are you? I never hear from you. And it's because you put so much energy into your work, first of all, and then also your family. It should be the other way around.
Right.
I think that's, it's still that thing that when you're not able to be there 100%, that's when people around you stop counting 100% on you.
Right.
So that might be the reason, because I always thought when the kids were younger, I was like, why don't they come and pick me up in the airport? And my wife was like, you come home late at night, like you're worn out anyway, like you can fucking take the metro or taxi or whatever, like we don't want to pick you up. And it's kind of sad because you want that, you want to be greeted and you want to be missed and you want to be, and I think people miss you when you're not here, but I think at the same time, they're used to a daily routine when you do, and that's why now you said you made some really beautiful friendships during Corona as well. Because you've had time to nurture them as well, I think, and be there for them and getting like to know each other properly, right? Without you having to go somewhere.
Right, exactly. But then it poses the question, you know, I mean, it's not like I can just, you know, if the world was normal right now, it's not like I could just not work. Obviously, I need to be able to pay my money to scat. But I mean, it begs the question of if our priorities are flipped, you know, if we are avoiding something in some kind of way subconsciously, and that's not a question that we're going to be able to answer here today for you, but it's an interesting thing. I think being aware of it is obviously the most important aspect of it. I mean, obviously, if you don't act on trying to figure it out and figure out why you know, aside from the fact that it's your job, but why you desire to be away and why you desire to expose yourself to a potentially toxic environment.
Yeah. But because the fashion industry, that's, you mentioned it very well on the phone last night when you said it's a form of masochism.
Yeah.
And I thought about that a lot after, and I was thinking, it's actually true. This is definitely a form of masochism, because we love it, and it's like the dog being kicked by his owner, and you keep coming back. And we still love it. We love the industry and the aspects of it that we hate or resent, at least. Maybe not hate, but at least resent, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I still like, I'm still anxious to travel. But I then at the same time like rue the idea of leaving for a month, like I was supposed to go to Paris, just a quick story. I was supposed to go to Paris like 2 weeks ago for a shoot, and I didn't want to fly because of all of the requirements for testing. I got tested before I was planning to leave the country, just as a disclaimer, negative, by the way. And as I was getting in the car, leaving, like, you know, as I was crossing off of Sjælland and crossing the bridge, I was like, thinking like, man, like, what am I, you know, why am I doing, I didn't need to, I had this job. It wasn't like a great paying job, but it was work, which I can't turn anything down right now. And as I crossed off of Fyn onto Jutland, I got contacted by my client, by my agent, telling me about my client had, the job had canceled because the person couldn't come. And I had this desire to continue to drive to Paris, even though I had no purpose to go there. And then I just pulled over in Kolding and turned around and came back home. And I was like, oh, I would just much rather be home. Even though Paris is a wonderful city, I just much rather be home. And I was like, and I think that that was a moment of a little bit of awareness for me, and like where I was like, okay, like I value the life that I have at home. Like I was willing to go, you know, halfway across the continent to take a photo of one person. It would have taken 5 minutes, but I thought it would be a bit of an adventure. Yeah. But I was very relieved then to be able to go back home and to not continue that, you know, masochism. I mean, it was going to be.
But that's
like
actually a healthy thing.
Sure. I can't pay my rent. Yeah, I would love to have been masochistic for 5 days in Paris. But I was happy to be back home. But then at the same time, I'm still currently looking forward to hoping that Milan and Paris Women's Fashion Week will happen in a couple of weeks. And knowing full well what stress that's going to bring and the possible depression or whatever, just unhealthiness of it, I still look forward to it. And that's a weird, you know, like, you know, I kind of want to get kicked by my owner kind of feeling. Like, you know, I haven't been kicked by my owner in a while. Does it still love me? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you look forward to traveling?
Right yeah, now? I think I was thinking the other day, since I was 19 and I'm almost 44 now, I've been to Paris 2 to 4 times a year.
Right.
Every year.
Wow.
And so this is the longest I haven't been in Paris. I was in Paris in like same time last year. So it's actually been a year now.
Okay.
That I haven't.
When was the last time you were on an airplane?
That was in probably in November. I was in Stockholm.
Okay.
I went to Stockholm a couple of times when it was still okay to travel, and there was nothing. We did like all precautions and
everything was kosher.
And so that's the last time, and it feels kind of weird. And at the same time, as you put it, it's nice because it's a relaxing thought that you don't have to, but as you said, you have to make some money. Right. So how would you do that? I was just thinking, because you are like, I know you hate getting praised, so that's why I'm going to do it, but we're putting you on the spot when looking you in the eyes and watching your cheek blush. But you are an extremely brilliant photographer. You are very, very talented photographer. So I was thinking, is like now when fashion is not happening, if the fashion weeks are not being held in the same order as normal, would you ever go like to Africa for charity foundation, like doing beautiful portraits? Would you go to a war zone shooting? Obviously not putting you don't want to put yourself in like unnecessary danger, I think, but you could go into a military camp, do portraits for an exhibition or for someone who could like sponsor you for a joint exhibition or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to do something. I mean, I don't just for reference, like I don't just, I mean, you know this, but just shoot fashion, but that is, you know, unfortunately, we kind of all pigeonhole ourselves into being one thing, one role, which is the purpose of this whole thing that we're talking about. But I don't consider myself to be like a creative person. So the idea of like coming up with a concept like that is very difficult for me. I've always kind of been given a concept by a client or a magazine or whatever, and then pursued that on my own. I need to be given the spark. I'm not the kind of person to like self-start with those kinds of things. I wish that I were. I you know, make to-do lists of you know, okay, sit down and brainstorm or whatever. I mean, that's why I'm doing this podcast as well, I think, is this was one of my ideas. It has nothing to do with photography. But yeah, I would love to do something like that. I would not go to a war zone only due to the fact that, you know, I know my addiction to traveling for fashion weeks, and I assume that if you expose me to gunfire or suicide bombers and I survive, then I would probably feel like I was invincible and go running around on the front lines with no bulletproof vest on and end up dead in a couple of shoots.
We don't want
No, I don't want. I mean, I think it would be insanely rewarding and insanely exciting, but I don't trust my ability to stop that.
But you sometimes you shoot nature as well, only like for your own pleasure I sense.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different ways to do that as well.
I mean, well, you know, I did this little magazine this summer of with Norse being hunted, and those were all photos. I bought this little Sony camera and had it in my jersey pocket, and I go on these in, I rode like 14,500 kilometers last year.
Oh.
and because I had nothing to do, and I took all these photos with this little camera as I go around, because my also like one of my the one thing about Denmark that I don't like, which or that I didn't like, is I'm from Washington State, which kind of looks a lot like Norway with this insane, you know, elevation gains and what, you know, like the equivalent of fjords and like, you know, islands in the middle of the Puget Sound and, you know, 4,000 meter mountains and whatever. And then you come to Denmark and like
it's flat,
it's flat, flat, flat. And so when I first started cycling, I would just ride up Strandvejen up to Helsingør and then come back, just because I didn't know about GPS and planning all these routes. And I thought riding by the sea would be super nice. And I did that ride about four or five times. And I was like, well, that's extremely boring. And I started to go inland into the northern part of Sjælland and exploring. And although the landscape was not like where I'm from, the contrast again was so different. And it's so like pastoral and like calm and you know, it's all farmland basically. And I found this different kind of beauty in it, which actually for me is still super inspiring, which is very weird, because I would think that it would be I always just expected to be bored by Danish landscapes. And as I've now I have this insane desire to get on my bike and like I've tried to ride almost every road in North Sjælland.
Yeah.
Like and I'm getting close. I'm filling in the lines on the map. It's a big addiction, but I love it. But now I want to ride all over. And I rode my bike to Berlin last summer and then back. And I rode my bike to Hamburg with some Danish guys. And that's where I kind of draw my inspiration from. But I don't know.
But you shoot while you go along?
Yeah, I do.
Also, like piling up for projects, because there's a lot of different things that also all over now it's difficult to travel and people hate everyone who's traveling and they wanna keep everything local. So I know it's probably super difficult, but then
I think that there could be a story there, and like I would love to like somehow find, you know, a bike brand or a, you know, a GPS brand or something like that who would monetize it. And I think that I would feel it would be very rewarding. I don't feel like I would be diminishing my integrity in any way by doing that. And when I have taken these photos, when I published this little magazine last summer with these photos that I've taken in during the lockdown here, it was very rewarding. And I think that it was more rewarding taking those photos for that little magazine that we gave away for free and for these t-shirts that we sold to raise money for the European Network Against Racism or something like that. I refused to take any money in that situation, regardless of my financial duress, because I felt like this was in the beginning of Black Lives Matter protests going on, and I thought that it was important to give to something, and I also felt that if I took something from that, then I would be diminishing my integrity as well. But I felt from this little free magazine that we gave away more like validated than both of the books that I've published that we've sold for money. Because those were, although those are photos that I'm proud of, like I don't think that it's quite as honest of a display of who I am and like what, you know, what I'm interested in, at least at this juncture in my mind. Just to go back onto the topic of our careers, I am completely bored with fashion. I don't really desire any clothes. Like I don't pay attention to run. Like I like to be backstage at the shows. I find it visually stimulating. I find it, you know, the creativity to be very interesting, but I kind of call bullshit a lot of the times. Like, you know, you go to a show and there's a little paper on your chair that tells you what you're about to see. And it's like, the designer went to a flea market in Marrakesh and purchased this rug that was this color blue, and she brought it back home, and her dog died on the rug, and now that rug isn't forever ingrained in her memory, so she's taken this color and made a 40-look collection from this color. And I'm like, bullshit. Like, she opened a Pantone book and found the color and liked it, and, you know, don't
went
blow smoke
on Pinterest
up my ass.
And found, oh, Marrakesh.
Yeah, and you know, and it's like, there always needs to be this story, and I just call bullshit. Like, I'm back to it, like, I'm not in love with fashion anymore. I'm stimulated by fashion, but I don't think that it's, and again, putting that together with the fact that, you know, we're not saving any lives by being part of this industry, it makes me wonder if, you know, if that's I want to do forever.
But I think.
But hold on, real quick. Are you still in love with fashion? Like, do you?
Yeah, that's, I was just thinking about that now you said it, because I also work as a photographer, and I think that now I'm also in love with fashion, that I can find beauty in a beautifully made Prada dress, even though it would look horrible on me.
Well, it might look good. Have you ever tried a beautiful Prada dress on?
Okay. Well. Tried it. But looking at it from your perspective with the eyes of a photographer, I think you don't need to be in love with fashion, but I think you're in love with the beautiful picture. So that's I reckon you also like view the world in also in pictures, not only in pictures, but also in pictures. So when you see, like, with all your experience, many, many years of photography, when you go into a room, or when you cross a street, or when you're at a fashion show, or wherever you are in the world, if you're riding through a landscape, you see the pictures.
Right.
This is a beautiful picture. That one. This is like, and there are lines in the pictures. There are like, which people would be nice. Like you're actually waiting for the right second, and you'll be like, now this is the window. Now it's closed again. This is the window, and so I think, if we don't need to be, or you don't need to be in love with fashion, but just as long as you're still in love with the beautiful picture, that's right.
Well, and I maintain that I don't shoot the clothes that the people are wearing are just the element that makes it interesting to the masses. Like, I'm too afraid to just take photos of normal people on the street. Not like well-dressed people, but I mean, I would love to be the guy who could, like, take photos of, you know, weathered homeless people, or go to a third world country and document the poverty or the happiness or whatever that comes from the different lifestyles. But that's not me. I get very nervous about that kind of situation. So I need the excuse of the environment where it's okay to take photos of people randomly on the street.
You're actually invited to do this show.
Yeah, right? Or at least it's known that, you know, like if you walk into a show, you're probably going to have your photo taken. But I always maintain that the clothes that the people are wearing are just the, like, third element, and I'm more interested in, you know, I'll turn up at a show, even if it's a great designer, I'll turn up at a show, and if it's at 12 o'clock noon in June in Milan, and the sun is bright white, and everybody has their eyebrows casting a shadow over their eyes, I'll just go to the next show, because I'm like, well, I'm not here to take shitty photos. Like, I don't want to, you know, I'd rather miss all of those looks, because I don't care about the looks, because I'm not trying to sell anybody any clothes with my photos. And I'll go to the next show or look for a little pocket of light where the light might be nice in order to take good photos. Because the last thing that I want to do, and I have done this, with the desire to, like, keep up with everybody. But, like, the last thing I want to do is create content, like, which arguably my photos can be used for content, of course. But but I don't want to create diarrhea that, you know, that isn't necessary. I don't need to put any, you know, there's 500 photographers at every show. I don't need to take a photo that all, there doesn't need to be a 501st photo. No. Like, 500 is plenty.
But I think you all have, like, of course there's some that get inspired by others and stuff like that, but you have your different approach. Your approach to, like, as far as I've viewed you throughout the years, is that you prefer actually to take the picture when people are not necessarily aware of it.
Yes.
So if you can capture it, and that's an extremely difficult balance, being that most of the people that are there want their picture right. taken. So they're hoping for it, or they're waiting a bit longer outside the show, yeah. or like crossing the street, as we said before, 1,000 times. But when you sense that's the, when I've watched you work throughout the years, like in a stalker way. No, I've just noticed that you're waiting for the moment when then like
let off. Their guard down.
Yeah, exactly. And then you take away. There's a lot of photographers outside the shows then ask you to stop.
Yeah,
and like. Let's and then
like a lookbook photo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. What are you wearing? And what brand is your hat?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, and I think that's like to try to show again, going back to the superficial aspect of everything is like I want to show like Ana De La Russo in you know after she's crossed the street 6 times for the photographers. I want to show her when she's lets the smile off of her face and you can tell she's actually in a you know bad mood and or whatever like and show you know or show somebody. Late for the show running in who does not want their photo or you know maybe yeah. normally would want their photo taken but yeah. it's more important for them to get to the show and show the stress on the face and the hectic aspect in the same way that when I really like to go one of the worst shows in Paris to shoot outside of is Chanel because it's just chaos especially with all the terrorism that's happened in Paris and in the last years they put up all these you know cement barriers and the photographers aren't allowed close and you end up not getting that many photos but I really like to go outside of Chanel. And while all the other photographers are shooting all of the people that they're supposed to shoot, in quotations, I'm making quotations here, but you can't see me. I like to shoot the old ladies who, with the plastic surgery and the Botox and the, you know, filled up lips and, you know, wearing 500,000 euros worth of Chanel, who are arguably too old or whatever to be photographed, you know, or don't have enough Instagram followers or whatever. Yeah. I like to show that aspect of the industry as well. That's the true consumer of the Chanel brand.
But in that way, you're halfway there. You know, when like shooting someone where you're not like what you said before makes you anxious right. to shoot someone that is not that perhaps not want their picture taken because right. you're actually already halfway there. I know you're in the fashion scene. You're surrounded by your friends or colleagues or or opponents or like the entire thing, but that makes you safe because you've done this for so many years, so you know where to go, how to do it. You know the cities in and out. But I think actually you could do some like breathtakingly beautiful pictures. Is that the way you pronounce it?
Sounds fine.
Yeah. we're doing a bit of grammar here at the same time. No, while you go, when you travel all over the world. And I think it's just a matter of convincing yourself or crossing that line. Yeah. And once you crossed it, it's like, I think it's much more easy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the biggest part, it's like quitting smoking or quitting drinking or whatever. It's like, you know, arguably the only thing that you need to do to quit smoking or quit drinking is stop bringing your hand up to your mouth, right? If you break that part of the chain, then you don't smoke anymore, you don't drink. So my biggest thing is picking up my camera and putting it around my neck, you know, and I refuse to, in that same way, like I refuse to put my camera in a bag because that's extra step of taking it out of a bag to stop to take a photo. Will stop me. I'll create an excuse. It's like going to the gym. It's like, well, I can give you 50 reasons why I don't want to go to the gym, but there's only one reason why I should go to the gym, right? So I can convince myself to not take a photo because of all of this effort that I'll have to put into it. So if I can convince myself on a daily basis or, you know, every other day or whatever to just pick up my camera and throw it over my shoulder and go walk around the city, that's the step. And it's very difficult for me to convince myself to do that in this moment because I'm feeling quite unmotivated, I suppose. So recently, you know, now the sun's out.
Now
we're going to talk about the weather. It's the most it's the most interesting thing two people can talk about.
No, I was just thinking this is actually a nice way of rounding off the podcast because when you started out, you said you used to be a photographer. Mm. Actually, it was quite poetic because the sun came out and lit up your face.
Is that right?
But at the same time, your eyes lit up when you were talking about photography.
Oh, interesting.
So you're back to, it's like the alcoholic. You never actually laid down your camera.
Right.
It's still almost almost visually hanging around your neck.
Yeah.
So it's just back in the saddle and finding the right project. I think there's a lot of projects out there.
Well, let's see. Let's be hopeful. Okay, so then we've established that everybody that we know is a product of a psychosis and or maybe a masochist, that I'm apparently still a photographer, that you love fashion. I'm so-so about it. And
you love the beautiful picture.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, sure. I can do that outside of fashion as well. But yes, I do. And what else did we talk about? We talked about sadness, happiness, contrast. I think
stress.
This was pretty fucking cool, man.
Yeah, like, me I too. This, I really liked it. It was very homogenic.
Yeah.
I hope they can keep it in this long length.
Yeah.
So they don't cut too much out of it. But it was really a pleasure.
Thanks
to
for
be
coming.
Here, and thank you for having me.
And next week we'll have President of the United States, Joe Biden, on the program. I'm very impressed. It'll be my second guest. It's a huge honor. So thanks for listening to What Else Do You Want to Talk About? And bye-bye.